Bob McCallum, John Shannon. It's a podcast / radio program for this midweek. It's that time of year again. You get to November, and the inductions into the Hockey Hall of Fame arrive.
Finally, again, if you recall, we haven't had one because of the pandemic, Bob. You know,
I really
able to get together.
Hadn't noticed. What pandemic is that, John?
That's something new. Well, you're living in your past area.
Well,
you don't see my cocoon.
Your
bubble. You're in your bubble, Ben.
One of the guys going into the Hockey Hall of Fame, and I bet you there's a whole bunch of people would have bet he was already in there. It's Kevin Lowe.
Yeah.
Who becomes what, the seventh Oiler player?
I think
from
so.
His era.
Yeah. Of that Stanley Cup team. You know, here's a guy who won 5 Stanley Cups in Edmonton and then won a 6th with the New York Rangers.
He will be induced, as I like to say, into the Hall of Fame next week. And he will join us to chat about that and maybe a little bit about the current Oiler team, what he thinks of them. He works for them. Kevin Lowe, when we come back after these messages. McCallum and Shannon back with you on the podcast and on Sirius XM channel 167. He is the vice chair of the Oilers Entertainment Group. 6 Stanley Cups, retired number.
Oh, hold on, more important than that. Come on.
What? I'm not finished.
Oh, I know, but you made the lead.
Well, no, I left it till the end.
And the reason he's on. And the reason he's on the show. He's going to be inducted to the Hockey Hall of Fame next Monday.
Induced into the Hockey Hall of Fame next week. Kevin Lowe is with us. So, 6 Stanley Cups, all this number retired a week ago or so in Edmonton, now the Hockey Hall of Fame. You had to give up one of those. Which one would you give up?
Oh, that's a very good question, Bob. Let me start by saying that just John cutting in on you there, believe me, I'm used to it from all those years when we worked together. So
yeah, it's typical for me too. I can assure you.
Sorry, I'm plugging in here because I saw a low battery. That's LOW. What would I give up? I probably would give up my number being the Hall of Fame. Well,
yeah,
I think over what my body of work at Edmonton, I think it deserved to have my number up. I don't necessarily think I deserve to be on the Hall of Fame. The Hall of Fame is an absolute for me. And so likely not one I would have thought I would get.
Well, that's very, humble of you to say, that. But surely over the last 20-something years, you had to think about the possibility. Didn't you?
Oh, in the early days, for sure, I became eligible and my name was, up with a bunch of guys. And, that would have been so 3 years after I played, I was eligible for 19 or 20 years.
Yeah.
And that it became, it finally came to reality. And I wasn't waiting on the side of my, sitting on the edge of my chair waiting. It's just, if it happens, it happens. Again, really not thinking I was a Hall of Famer. For me, it's Gretzky, Howe, Orr, Béliveau, those guys. Those are the Hall of Famers. Mind you, there are guys in there that I look at and go, well, my body works better than theirs. So you have that inner, I don't want to say turmoil, but those inner thoughts. But we had gone 20 years, so it wasn't happening. My mom was my biggest fan. She passed away a couple years ago, and she said, don't worry, it's going to happen. Trust me. And I'm like, I didn't want to tell her because she was getting older. Say, Mom, it ain't happened. That ship has sailed.
Yeah.
So it was pretty special when it happened.
I'm sure.
Before we talk about your career, let's talk about the most recent thing last Friday night. What was that like to be on the ice and to see the number 4 raised?
Really special, John. I in my position as an executive with the Oilers, I was on the ice for most of the other ones. And so I had lots of practice, even though I was, emotionally being impacted by the event. So it was to have the guys there on the ice, you know, not everybody was there, unfortunately, but had good representation. And then have my family, my kids are all older now, you know, that's the one, I guess, blessing that that it didn't happen 19 years ago that I went in the hall. Now, all my kids are old enough and starting to have grandkids that they appreciate it that much more. So it was a real special moment.
Just did the kids ever see you play?
Yeah. Let's see. When I was in New York in the last cup in 94, the kids were 3 and 1. So not much recollection there. Right. Coming back to Edmonton, the end of my career, when I started coaching, the kids went to the games, just the two older ones, four kids together. And I have an older son, Shane. And so Shane certainly saw me play.
I'm always intrigued by a number selection. Number four, what's the story behind that? How did you come up with that one?
Well, I wish it had a real, you know, glamorous answer to this question, but really it's just a number the Oilers gave me. Joe Micheletti, who's on the Rangers broadcast, wore number four the year prior with the WHA Oilers, and it was available. I actually wore number six my entire minor hockey career, into my lucky enough to wear it with the Quebec Ramparts as well. So I was really hoping for number six. Colin Campbell, very good friend and one of those leaders we had on the first year of that team, was expansion draft from Pittsburgh by the Oilers, and he had number six. He wore number six, so he got number six. So I have a little side story. After about 6 weeks, the season had started, and Coley came up to me and he said, "Hey, I'm hearing that you always wore number six, and you know, kind of intimated that, would you like that number?" And I'm thinking, "Wow, this is unbelievable. A veteran would do that sort of thing." I said, "Well, what are you saying? You're going to give me number six?" He said, "Well, no, I'll give it to you. I'll sell it to you."
That's right. You know, saw that coming.
That's our so pal, said, Coley. That's our I pal, said, Coley.
No, no, that's okay. I'll stay with four. But, you know, the truth be told, I was a massive Jean Beliveau fan growing up, and my mom was a huge Bobby Orr fan. And that's what the first thing my mom said. You know, I said, "Well, I didn't get number six." Told her I got number four, and she was so excited, you know. You know, Bobby Orr's number. I said, "You know, I don't play Bobby Orr, Mom, remember?"
Well, and you couldn't have had four for the Rempart because that was Flower's number.
That was Flower's number, exactly. Yeah, lots of significance. Yeah, and although, again, Guy was I was a big fan of Guy as well. You know, growing up in the Montreal corridor, you couldn't help be a Canadiens fan. You know, for us to go on the way we did and cement ourselves in the history of the game, of arguably one of the greatest teams, if not the greatest team, you know, just can't even believe it because of my days watching the Montreal Canadiens. You never thought that anyone could ever.
What's intriguing, too, is, as you mentioned, you wound up going to the Rangers, as, you know, fans will recall, and won another Stanley Cup there in 94. How many former Oilers were on that team? Like six, eight, six, something
seven,
like that?
Six, I think.
It was actually seven. And our friend Michael Budman and Don Green made us nice roots jackets and put on the side the group of seven. And there was seven of us. There was really Mike Hudson was the seventh who played with the Oilers and didn't play much in the playoffs. But, you know, Mark Messier, Craig McTavish, Esa Tikkanen, Jeff Bukaboom, Glenn Anderson, and I mean myself. Am I missing one?
Well, McTee, right?
Mike Hudson.
Did you say McTee?
Yeah, Mike Hudson.
What about Bukaboom?
And Jeff Bukaboom, of course, yeah. Bukaboom and Leach were the number one pairing, and I played with Sergei Zubov. at 30 gold, played a regular shift and penalty kill. No power play, of course, because Leach and Zubov were a pretty formidable pairing. I think there's three Hall of Fame defensemen on that team now that we look back on it.
Did in that time in New York, I want to talk about the Oilers stuff because I remember the Oilers stuff more, but in your time in New York, did you always feel you were still an Oiler?
No. was ready, John. You know, I'd been here for 13 years. I'd been in Edmonton for 13 years. Those days, I was actually an unrestricted free agent after 13 years. But the Oilers still had first right of refusal. So Glenn, different time completely. Glenn, I asked to be, you know, if I, Rangers and the Canadians both offered me twice of what Glenn was offering me on his final offer. So it was time to move on. But he took his time trading me. And then he came to me in December of 1992. So I hadn't started the season. I was skating with the University of Alberta Golden Bears and the Kamloops Blazers to get ice time. And he said, okay, well, I'm going to give you what you want. And he said, and better still, you have choice between the Montreal Canadiens and New York Rangers. I've got deals with both. Where do you want to go? And you know, I obviously chose New York because of Mark being there and Book at the time and Adam Graves, guys that I knew, and it was exciting. But I passed a chance for the Stanley Cup that year because Montreal won the Cup that year in 1993.
Two interesting characters in the front office of that Rangers team. Tell me about your relationship with the coach and also with the general manager, was Neil Smith at the time.
Yeah, Neil was, you know, Neil's a sharp hockey guy you know, he was, they're all in, going all in to try to win it. They figured they had that window, had a window. The 92-93 season, when I got there in December, it was a train wreck. You know, Mark wasn't happy. And team didn't make the playoffs. Right. You know, I think they won the President's Trophy a year or two before, and then they didn't make the playoffs. And then made the coaching change, brought Mike Keenan in. Perfect guy at the perfect time. You know, had a boatload of veterans, of course, Mark being the leader. And, you know, Mike just, he just pulled enough and, you know, prodded and poked enough people, none of which I saw. He never once said anything to me, which is kind of interesting. I remember when he got hired, I was talking to Wayne Gretzky that summer. And I thought, oh boy, this is going to be a disaster for me because I'd never played for Mike. I was out of the cups in 87 and 91 because I was injured both times. So I said, I'm worried that this isn't going to go well. And Wayne said, you have absolutely nothing to worry about, Kevin. And I said, why? He says, because you've got five cups and Mike has none. So, and which was the case. And they paired me with Sergei Zubov right out of training camp you know, went on to be the top, won the President's Trophy. I think we had the top power play, top penalty kill. It was ridiculous team's numbers, but they were ready. You know, Kovalev was a young star emerging. Brian Leetch was at the height of his game. Adam Graves became the top power forward. Zubov, you know, no one knew that he'd become a Hall of Famer. And then Mike Richter was an unbelievable goalie. So, you know, it was a wonderful year. But sorry, John, I didn't finish your question about did I ever, you know, once you get to, on a new team and you go through the highs and lows, you become them. I became a New York Ranger. It took that first year of losing, not making the playoffs, to really solidify things. And then, you know, in 93-94 was just a Cinderella season. So, then I became, you know, a Ranger at heart.
But you went back and finished your career with the Oilers, correct?
That's right. I had two more years. So I played two more years with the Rangers after the Cup. I think we won a round in both years, I believe. And then by then I was 37. The Rangers, you know, they had unloaded Doug Waite, Todd Marchant, Tony Amonte, you know, to bring in all these old guys. So they needed to do a rebuild. So the Rangers didn't re-sign me. Actually, the Calgary Flames came after me aggressively. Al Coates, my wife Karen grew up in Banff. Al made a compelling, reach out or story about, you know, come and play for a couple years and then perhaps work with the Flames or get involved. He knew I was interested in business and that a lot of the ex-Flames had stayed in Calgary. And it was really compelling. I went through that whole summer thinking I was going to sign with the Flames. And then I woke up one morning in August. Meanwhile, Glenn was kind of, he heard I was going to the Flames. So I think he felt, well, I better get in the fray. And so anyhow, I was still thinking of signing with the Flames. I woke up one morning, actually looked in the mirror and said, I can't play for the Calgary Flames. Like, really? Seriously? It was just as simple as that. It was like there was a switch, and it wasn't over a long discussion debate. And I think Al and I are good friends. Al Coatsett is, and he thinks to this day, I was using the Flames to leverage them, but I really wasn't. The Oilers really hadn't come after me. Dallas was interested. Doug Armstrong tried to get me back to Dallas to play with Zuboff because they had Zuboff at the time. And then Glenn came a knock and he said, well, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I want to play. And he said, well, but what do you want to do after? I said, well, coach, I guess. I wanted to stay in hockey somehow, if not directly with an organization. Then I had lots of opportunity to get in the media, or I would have had. Yeah, and and so he said, thank you, John. So he said, well, how about I give, why don't I sign you to contract 1 year to play, then 2 years to coach? And you can't have those contracts anymore either, by the way. And so that was my contract. I signed to play for 1 year, and then I had a 2 year contract with the amount of money attached to it, but no particular role, but just a coach. And the Oilers hadn't made the playoffs for 4 years. When I was away in New York, I came back. Finally, they made the playoffs again. Of course, nothing to do with me because I was a 37-year-old defenseman. Their young guys were starting to come. So fit in well, played with Dan McGillis. And so then they extended me and I played another year and then went on to coach.
You talk about Glenn, Glenn's metamorphosis as, mentor to friend to father confessor. Your relationship with Glenn is an interesting one when you consider that he drafted you as an 18-year-old and in the end, one of your best friends.
Yeah, really fortunate that way. And Glenn, you know him well, John. I mean, he's an amazing person. And, he deserves all the accolades he gets because he was a father figure for us. We were young guys. And he had his two boys, Justin and Shannon, they were little guys, so he was just, he and Ann were kind of babysitting these 18 and 20-year-olds. And just everything, really. I'll say this in my Hall of Fame speech that he really tried to make us believe we could become great before we started to look like it would be great. And I always just thought it was he's just trying to pump us up, right? But he probably obviously from his experience playing in the NHL. Saw the skill level, obviously, of Wayne and Mark emerging and Koff and all these guys that he really the seed for us, not just to try to win a Stanley Cup, but to become one of the greatest teams of all time. And then all the personal stuff. I mean, he was such a classy person, taught us or told us how we should dress and told us when we went to New York City, we should stay out of the bars and go to the museums and go to the opera, go to a show. It hit home.
Hold on. Listen, I was on a few of those trips.
I'd try to get one show in anyways.
So if you look at how you've created your management style, what did you learn from Glenn?
Well, just to respect people, to see the good in everybody, to see the ability, to give people a chance, not to be, looking over their shoulder or not to be, to build a relationship, the trust factor between the two of you, the respect for one another. And then to be able to honestly speak to someone to say, hey, listen, I'm not saying this because I dislike you or whatever. This is factual. I'm telling you how you're playing or telling you what you're doing because that's happening. How you handle is up to you. I remember going in and negotiating my contract with Glenn. And I learned a lot about that stuff too. He would forget what you said and just remember what he said. But there was so much respect. I think that's probably my biggest takeaway. And again, how he treated people. How we always he would put the coaching staff ahead of himself, and he always said the right things at the right time. he always had you a little bit off, you know, when you'd come to the rink thinking, oh man, you know, we're going to get our asses skated off today. That was a disaster. And he'd come in and say, you know what, let's just forget about that one. Let's just go out and have a good practice. And, you know, and it's that mindset, right. That is hey, that's good. He's being reasonable here. He had a lot of good traits.
There was funny. I always used to remember being around the club, and I actually dreaded you guys winning big, because he was tougher on every after wins than he was after losses all the time. Like he would, you guys win 8-1 the next day. He was a bear.
Yeah, because he knew he'd seen enough of it. He'd seen the track record that we probably went out and had a great time. And then, you know, pardon the expression, we'd shit the bed the next game, you know. So he was just trying to get some balance and all that and realize. And we were winning, you know, crazily sometimes, as you well remember, right? There was, you know, just, it was ridiculous. Wayne would just go out and, you know, and the other, you know, top offensive guys would just follow suit, and before we know it, we had 7 or 8 goals. But there was, you know, that wasn't the metamorphosis of winning a game. No one could teach that, right?
I'm intrigued by not to dwell on Sather, but do you think he was a better coach or a better general manager?
Oh, I think he was good at both. Bob, his strength as a coach with us was he could really dig in when the team was down. He really knew how to get the guys going, and he hated to lose as much as we did. And so he ran a good bench. I mean, tactically or technically, he wasn't the soundest coach in the world, and he was fortunate to have John Muckler and Ted Green with him. And Muckler, for sure, Teddy Green had evolved into. I mean, we were doing stuff technically that, you know, other teams never knew about. You know, everybody just thought it was this, you know, ridiculous amount of talent that was winning games. And I'll say the biggest misconception about the 80s Oilers is that we were very structured when it came time, you know, come playoff time, et cetera. And we learned that from the Islanders after 83, that we had to do something different. It wasn't just the talent win. And then they adopted a system, a real aggressive 2-1-2-4 check, that really played to our style of game, because we all wanted to move forward. And then it was just a matter of, you know, being sound. But general manager, I mean, when you think of the players he brought in, you know, Kenny Linsman and Kent Nielsen and players like that. He was always making a deal to bring, like, Raho Retzelaine, and he brought Randy Gregg in. I mean, well, those were Craig, key
Craig,
players.
Even Craig McTavish.
Yeah, and Mac T, of course. That's a long time ago, but for sure, you know, made incredible deals. The Billy Ranford trade, you know, getting Billy Ranford, he wins a Conn Smythe. Look at Glenn's list of trades. And he was always, I enjoyed when I was a manager, and he was with the Oilers, and he was in New York, because I loved the conversations, and as much as I trusted him, I didn't trust him on any of the, you know, any of the discussions. It's like, cause I just know he's so darn competitive. But towards the end, as I had a few years as a general manager, you know, I let my guard down with him, and we made a few deals that, you know, his evaluation and my evaluation synced up, and they ended up being good deals for both teams.
So you were a player, a coach, and a general manager, all with the Oilers, of course. Which do you miss the most?
The playing, for sure. You know, that's an interesting question. When Glenn was leaving to go to New York in 2000, I was the head coach, and I had an out in my contract that I could leave anytime Glenn leaves. So he had asked me to come to New York with him and be the coach. Meanwhile, the ownership group here, Cal Nichols of the Edmonton Investors Group, had approached me about being general manager, staying. Glenn was leaving, so they were offering me to be general manager. And I was head coach at the time. And I knew very well that I couldn't do both. are, you know, not at such a, you know, I was so new to that side of things. And I wanted to, with Glenn leaving, I wanted to maintain some sort of stability and balance to the, to the, to the oil machine. You know, I just, with Glenn was the guy, and with Glenn leaving, you know, who was going to sort of maintain the tradition of the Oilers? And so, and I just moved back to Edmonton. So, but I did go in and see Glenn and ask him, you know, Glenn, okay, I'm going to ask you, what do you think I should do? And he told me at the time, he said, there's three jobs in hockey. He said, there's playing, there's coaching, there's managing. So coaching's the playing's the best, coaching's the second, managing's the third best. At the time, I thought he was just trying to convince me to come with him to New York. After about 8 years in the general manager's chair, I quickly realized playing is the best, coaching is the second best, and managing is the third best.
Let's take a break with the soon-to-be Hockey Hall of Famer. You get to be called a Hockey Hall of Famer before you're actually inducted?
Well, you shouldn't.
You should, sort of, shouldn't you? Kevin Lowe is with us. We'll come back after these messages. He's the vice chair of the Oilers Entertainment Group, six Stanley Cups. His number retired a week or so ago, Hockey Hall of Famer on November 15th. You said you, Kevin Lowe is with us. You've written your speech already?
I have, yeah. Yeah, the Hall of Fame wants it in advance so they can pictures and video, or, you know, to the story. And they want desperately for us to stay at 5 minutes. So lots of practice. And I think they want to scrutinize it before he actually say it.
How many times have you practiced reading the speech?
Not only for timing, not for I've written a lot of speeches for myself. I've done a fair amount of public speaking, and I'm not a great writer, so it takes me forever, but I pound away and get the punctuations the right place. And so I've got it to about, I've got to get another 30 seconds off of it to make the Hall of Fame.
We know a few guys at TSN, they'll give you 30 seconds. They'll give you an extra. We'll get Paul Graham will give you 30 more seconds, Kev, at some point. You know, he's an Oiler fan. You know, that's going to be okay for you.
So Kenny Holland is just next door to me here at Oilers Entertainment Group's offices. And we've been chuckling about it. And Kenny goes, I have it down to 7 minutes. I can't get any lower. I just can't. You know, Kenny. And I was thinking to myself, well, maybe I'll sell them 2 minutes of mine.
there's the Coley Campbell story coming back to you, right?
I'll take three, and he can have 7 minutes.
So this is the last 20 years have been a real roller coaster for you. I mean, for me, watch last Friday night to see the ovation, to see the laughter, to see the four go up. It wasn't that long ago, Kevin, where you weren't the most popular guy in Edmonton.
Yeah.
It was hard on you. It was hard on Karen. It was hard on the family. How have you managed to stay so loyal to the organization and to the...
Yeah, I think I would see people often because I'm out a lot. You know, I'm at charity events and function, and the outrage for my dislike didn't seem to be in proportion with what people would say to me personally. You know, I like to think, and that's maybe my own self-preservation, was a vocal minority. You know, my good friend Bob Stauffer will say to this point, taken over someday, that I was the second best general managers in Oilers history. Now, of course, Kenny Holland's looking to change all that. But, you know, I didn't want to ever defend myself when I was being criticized. I wasn't the one making the hockey decisions. The people I put in charge was making the hockey decisions. The only mistake to me I would have made is obviously the wrong decision in people. But there's so many, you know, so as you well know, there's so much that goes on in hockey, but I wasn't around going to go around defending my own participation in what was going on in the Oilers world. And that's, I believe, one of the reasons why I've stayed here so long is that I didn't submarine anyone and I didn't try to save my own skin. But to your point, John, no question. It's very disappointing to me. And one of the things which was, you know, totally media, if had you been around, you might've saved me a little better, was that I misspoke a tiny bit and the media ran with it. And they tried to put a wedge between me and the fans, insinuating that I thought there was two class of fans, which wasn't what I said. What I said was, it was all about, how did we know that staying the course was the right decision? They said, well, we had done lots of market research with our fans. And they said, well, like who, for instance? I said, well, the paying fans, you know, because that's the only, you know, those are the only people we could talk to. We couldn't talk to, you know, and that wasn't a season ticket holder that didn't. So, and the media ran with it and they, you know, headlines that Kevin Lowe thinks there's two tiers of fans. So I think that whole thing added to it that I was, you know, this some, you know, snobby person up in the high tower. But anyhow, it's all, that's water under the bridge. And I think my obviously my hockey reputation speaks for itself, and I think my general manager's reputation speaks for itself. And if a poor job, it was as president hiring other people to do my job.
Okay, so the other one for me is I remember two of your goals. Okay, obviously the first one in October of 79 in Chicago, which was the first goal of the franchise in the NHL. And then there was the one in game three or game four of the 84 final, three, where you came in off the blue line and backhand beat Billy. And which one do you remember?
That I remember that one for sure. That was, you know, it was a critical time. We came from Long Island tied at one in the series. You know, although we had won game one, it just barely won. And then the Islanders hammered us pretty good in game two. So there was still, you know, a fair amount of doubt in all our minds. And I can't remember that it was in the first period. And I know Glenn Anderson crossed the blue line and backed the D's up a little bit, kind of sucked them in. And I came trailing up the side and he just slipped. So I had a bit of a lane to go in and froze forehand, pulled in my backhand, put in the open net. And it kind of, the building, I think it was the first goal that night. And the building just went crazy because, you know, we had scored a goal, but, you know, I had scored it. So it's like, we got to be winning if Kevin scored.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it's everybody, just as an aside, everybody talks about Mess's goal in game four, the one across the blue line. But I think your goal changed the whole perspective of those three games in Edmonton more than any other. That goal that changed the momentum of the series more than any other, and then allowed you guys to win in five games.
I'll take it.
Well,
it's lovely to chat about goals, and you have them in your career. But I'll tell you the one thing that's more interesting to me: the number of penalty minutes, Lowe, that you accumulated over the course of your career. Now, I will concede, and I think we should all make note for younger viewers or listeners, that this was an era where there was more physicality, there were more penalties called. But how would you categorize that in terms of your history? Are you proud of that? I don't know, is it 1,200 minutes, 1,400 minutes, like that? That's a lot. You spent a lot of time in that little box on the side of the rink.
You know, different era, of course, Bob. I mean, they used to hand out 10 minutes like handing out...
like crackers, yeah.
Yeah,
crackers. Hold on. You're not saying that they're not all... those weren't all 10-minute misconducts, Kevin. Let's face it, your nickname was Vicious.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there was more penalties back then, for sure. I mean, I wasn't a fighter. I fought a few times only because you had to. So... minor penalties, and I thought I was a relatively clean player, but apparently not. I think there was a lot of 10 minutes in there, John. I really do. But, you know, it was a different, that was a different era. Like, there were very few guys would qualify for the Lady Byng Trophy, right? That was almost like a badge of dishonor, right, in that era.
Our producer just put up on the screen for us 1,498 penalty minutes. Holy cow, that's a lot. Did you ever get hell from coaches? Like, you know, stay out of the box?
No, not really. I don't think so. It probably happened. That was, you know, Slats would say that was a horseshit penalty to take at the wrong time of the game. I'm sure that happened.
Yeah.
But I think that was, so what did I play? That's only that many minutes. It's only like 1 minute a game.
It's a little over a minute a game. You played 1,200 and change. I know better than you. You played 1,200 and change. You got 1,500 penalty minutes. So it's like 1.3 per game. That's enough.
Wow. Yeah, well, thinking about it, you know, a physical defenseman, you're gonna get like one penalty.
I get it. I wondered how conscious you were of that now and over the course of your career. So you talk a little bit about Joe. John, you wanted to jump in.
Well, I just you said you didn't get the 87 and 91 at the Canada Cups, but you were able to be involved in the Olympic management team. Where does that fit in everything you've done? 2002 and the gold medal, the first one in 50 years. Where does that fit?
That's really high up there for a couple reasons. I'd been a manager for a couple seasons, and Bob Nicholson asked Wayne to be the executive director of the men's Olympic team. It was, you know, fitting after what happened in 1998, when you think about it, Wayne was going to be in charge for 2002. And he called me up. I hadn't talked to Wayne in, maybe a year or two, just because we had young kids and, you know, we're in the business world or doing our thing. I was trying to figure out how to be a hockey manager. He was doing whatever he was doing. And, you know, out of blue, I got this call and was really just nice to hear his voice. And when he asked me to be his assistant for the 2002 Olympics, it was like, I mean, that's one of my greatest memories really in the game. It just, you know, it spoke to, I guess, his respect for me and trust. And, we went on to have a blast. That was such a fun time, a great moment in Canadian hockey history, you know, to win. We went to Torino 6, and, you know, that was, we'd made some wrong selections and that turned out bad. And so Wayne stepped down, and then, and I was, you know, more than ready. I had a good run, two Olympics, and, Steve Yzerman phoned me and asked me if I'd stay on for 2010 in Vancouver. And I was feeling, well, that's kind of gluttonous, you know, because those are prime opportunities for hockey people to get those jobs with Hockey Canada, the Olympics. But, you know, the Olympics in Canada, and, you know, Steve made a compelling reach out, and Bob Nicholson said, you know, that'd be good. So I hung in there for Vancouver. And then, of course, I couldn't pass on Sochi. So, you know, and just thinking of going to Russia and winning gold medal right in Russia. You know, I grew up watching the 72 series. In fact, my dad passed away shortly after. Like, that's my, you know, memories of Russia, Canada was just too strong not to go to Sochi one more time. And we won there again. But that's my Hockey Canada days.
So as you've watched this Edmonton Oilers team and the great start that the organization's off to, the team is off to, but can you identify what the difference is? Is it just time? Is it just learn how to lose before you learn how to win? You know, that old phrase. Is there something about this team this year that makes it significantly better than last year before?
Yeah, it's a combination of both, I believe, Bob. You know, the leaders, the top players, realizing that there's too much, you know, as Mike Keenan once said, there's two things in hockey, there's winning and there's misery. And you know, once you've had enough misery, you go, oh, we just got to find a different formula here. But also, Holland and the hockey, his hockey operations people, they made some great additions to the team. Players that they're smart players, they're they're good all round players. They seem to be quality individuals. So I mean, the combination of both. But I'd say at the moment, it's the additions they made that made a difference, and the fact that, you know, Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl coming into their primes of their careers. Sure. So. But the proof in the pudding will come playoff time. I mean, it's, you know, almost a foregone conclusion. They'll make the playoffs. And that for a lot of years was just a question mark. They've made 2 years in a row. They should, you know, make it this year. And then, you know, what they do in the playoffs, obviously will be what goes on their history line.
Tell us a little bit about the job of being a vice chair of Oilers Entertainment. Like what responsibilities do they give you? What kinds of things do you do on a daily basis?
Yeah. Well, I've been so fortunate to be around as long as I have in recent years, you know, when Peter Chiarelli came in, president of hockey operations, I'd have very little, if anything, to do with the hockey side other than, you know, bumping into Peter in the hallways and you know, me being a former manager, he being a manager, you know, like what's going on. The same with Kenny Holland. Kenny has Peter's same office just across the way here. And they're always so nice to, you know, kind of keep me abreast of what's going on, but not on a day-to-day business. Really, in probably the last 6 or 7 years, I've really enjoyed being on the business side and sitting in on all the executive meetings relative to the operation of the company, not hockey. And, I tell people I've been able to receive an executive MBA without actually have to go to school. Mm. And, you know, then I can transition that information out to the general public. I do a lot of the community. I'm involved with a lot of charities. I'm, you know, an ambassador of the Oilers and get out there and spread the gospel about the business and, you know, the need for support. And in the meantime, you know, people want to talk hockey. So at least I can, you know, give them without divulging anything, in, you know, from closed doors can entertain people enough that they want to stay true to the Oilers.
What do you think the new building has meant, Kevin? Because you were a big part of the final construction and you've been there since before it was even planned. The new building has to have a difference.
Oh, without a doubt. It's really, I mean, we haven't seen the overall impact yet because the pandemic just threw a wrench into everything. You know, downtown Edmonton really suffered. I mean, I think downtown everywhere suffered. So there's still lots of runway for development here in the downtown of Edmonton. It's going to mean a ton to the city. I mean, my hopes is that, you know, Daryl Cates's vision will come about in the coming years, that the Oilers will go deep in the playoffs and win a cup, and that whole downtown corridor will just be alive with people. You know, we had a bit of it the first in the building 4 years ago, I guess. We had just a taste of it, but with all the development, you know, the younger generation have been apprehensive to move downtown to this point. It's starting to happen. Young professionals, my daughter, a lawyer, and her husband are downtown. My other daughters moved downtown. That never happened 20 years ago. So really the building's impact was really to revitalize downtown Edmonton, plain and simple. And it's starting to show pay those dividends.
Before we let you go, this one kind of off the top of my head, and it reflects what I hear all the time about the great rivalry between Calgary and Edmonton. So you spend, you know, a significant amount of your time these days eating chicken dinners, I would assume, you know, on that circuit. So somebody from Yes. Calgary calls and says, come on down and do a speech here in Calgary. Would you go?
Oh yeah. I mean, for the right cause, absolutely. I,
How do you think they'd react to you, Kevin?
Well, I think there's been enough water under the bridge, Bob. I think it'd be okay. I've gone and done a couple of things, not a ton. I mean, they have enough people down there. But I remember my very first year and very first draft as a general manager. And that draft was in Calgary, of all places.
Ah.
And when I got up to announce our first round selection, you know, they're booing the crap out of me. And I said, I want to thank Calgary for this warm reception, you know, and it kind of broke the ice, right? But no, I mean, there was days that we have our summer place in BC and west, you'd have to go through Calgary, and I would take the back roads just so I didn't drive through Calgary. I just couldn't stand being in Calgary, and I'm sure they feel the same way about Edmonton. But lucky enough, they've built a ring road now, so I don't have to go downtown Calgary on my way to BC.
So, and you're going in with Jerome McGinley. You're in the hall with Jerome McGinley. So two of the greatest Oilers and Flames at the same time. There is some irony in that, isn't there?
There sure is. You know, and Jerome grew up in St. Albert, which is really a suburb of Edmonton. And when I talked about in 1992, when I didn't have anywhere to practice and I ended up in Kamloops, Jerome McGinley was, I believe, a 16-year-old player with the Kamloops Blazers. And, you know, see, Tucker was there and Shane Doan was there. Jason Strudwick, there was a pile of guys. Ryan Rashad was on that team. And think back to Donnie Hayes, first coach in Major Junior, first year in Major Junior. And and then to see, I mean, you know, you're sitting there looking at these kids trying to be, they probably thought I really wasn't that good, actually, but to think, you know, what went on with their lives. I mean, it's just almost storybook-like. And then, of course, being involved with Jerome in 02 and 06 and 20 Olympic teams. I mean, he's just such a class act. So
I got to tell you, this is a bit of a storybook, you know, the what you've done and how you've done it. The first feature I ever really ran on an Oiler broadcast was you and Wayne living together, if I recall, and cooking spaghetti. I'm not sure who the better cook was at that point. Do you remember?
There's no, John, no question. I was the better cook. Wayne couldn't even cook. And I mean, he was impressed that I could do, you know, I could do roast beef. Like, you know, how hard is it to put roast beef? You shove it in the oven, right? Some potatoes, boil some carrots. He referred to me as the cook. He said I was a gourmet cook, but I really wasn't a gourmet cook.
Well, we congratulate you on the honors you have received and the one you're about to get, which is an honor to be admitted into the Hockey Hall of Fame. We wish you continued success and enjoy yourself next week. I know you will. And thanks a lot for taking a few minutes for us today.
My pleasure, Bob. And nice to be on your show. And John, of course, we go way back. It's always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Kev.
Kevin Lowe, we'll come back and wrap it after these messages. Our thanks to Kevin Lowe for joining us. You're going to go to the Hockey Hall of Fame induction ceremony?
It's going to be a different format this year, but it's usually one of the great events of the year because there's no lots of hockey people. Nobody worries about winning and losing because if you're around hockey people, 50% win and 50% lose. So 50% are fun to be with and the other 50 are not. But this is a night where everybody wins. And so it's fun. Should be noted that Doug Wilson, the great defenseman of the Chicago Blackhawks, Kim St. Pierre, the goalie for Team Canada, the women's team, Kevin, Jerome, as we talked about, Marian Hossa, who might be the greatest two-way player ever to play the game. You know, that's pretty heady stuff when you think about Bob Gainey, but Hossa could score better. And Kenny Holland, as Kevin talked about, going into the Hall of Fame this year. So it's a big group, and
it's a big group.
I don't think anybody... there's always a bit of controversy who got in, who didn't get in. I don't think anybody's disagreeing with that list of people, particularly, I think, long overdue, Kevin Lowe. I mean, I think Kevin should have been in there before this.
Well, when we talked about having Kevin on the program, if I just assumed he was already in.
Yeah. Well, and
you know, surprised. It's a long time to wait.
Sure it is. And the Oilers have rules. Glenn Stather put the rules in years ago, was the only way you can have your number retired in Edmonton is to be in the Hockey Hall. And so that's why it's taken this long for Kevin to have his number retired as well.
I would never disagree with you on anything relating to hockey and certainly Edmonton Oilers. But I think Kevin Lowe was the one who rule in place.
Oh, it might have been. I just assumed it was Glenn. Because Glenn ran everything else.
I think it was Kevin himself when he was the general manager, put that rule in place and then had to live with it until he was inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame.
It made it easier. So why aren't you retiring your own number?
Well, yeah, sure. You know, I mean, that would have been a little uncomfortable, huh?
Yeah, it might have been. Might have been.
And he's got they have a pretty good hockey team this year. We will see whether they can put the magic together at the end of the year.
Here's the frustration for Kevin is that the night they retired his number, people were going to talk about what a great night it was to see Kevin Lowe's number retired. Now everybody's talking about Connor McDavid.
Yeah, I guess.
and we've forgotten that Kevin had his number retired on the same. But did you see Connor go through five guys?
Yeah, no kidding. That'll do it for us. We got to get out of here. We thank you for watching or listening, as the case may be. For John Shannon, Bob McCown, we'll see you tomorrow. Goodbye, everybody.